Welcome back to the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. In this episode, I'm very excited to speak with Nurse Kate. And the sum and substance of it is an episode all about blood pressure, which I think sounds boring to some people, but the reality is high blood pressure is known as the silent killer. It's one of the things that kills so many people on a yearly basis, and they have no idea that it's even coming. So please do me a favor, listen to this podcast, if not for you, for at least the possibility of saving a friend, a family member, a loved one, because it could really have a massive impact on your life and or the lives of someone you know. All right, Kate, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am delightful. I always feel awkward during these initial hellos because we just spent about 5 minutes saying hello before we start recording. I'm super happy to have you on. I'm really excited. This episode specifically is something people have been asking a lot about and anticipating because I've been talking about blood pressure a lot. And for anyone who doesn't know, your post is the reason I bought my own blood pressure monitor from Amazon. So actually, before we even go into it, do you just want to tell people where they can follow you on social media for more information?
Yeah, totally. I really use my Instagram the most. So it's at the Nurse Kate, but also on Facebook. And I don't really do Twitter. So
probably
Instagram
better.
And Facebook. Yeah.
Twitter is just a really awful place, which I try and spend. I tweet, but I try not to look at anyone else's tweets because just it's a rabbit hole you don't want to go down.
Yeah. Exactly. It ends up not being as helpful as I want it to be.
Yeah, it really does. So before we even get into blood pressure and why it's so important and how to track and all that, do you just want to give some background on yourself and what you do? And because people want to know, like, what qualifies you? And just, like, give some background on who you are and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a registered nurse. I live in Washington, D.C. I worked for 7 years at the biggest trauma center in Washington as a critical care nurse. So I did both trauma resuscitation and ICU post-cardiac care. So I kind of run the gamut as far as the critical care side of the nursing world. I left the bedside about 3 years ago and started working for Blue Cross Blue Shield, doing preventative health models, because in my experience in the hospital, what I saw is that a lot of these conditions that we're treating in the worst moments are preventable. So I wanted to work on preventative health and figure out how we can help people take a little bit of accountability for themselves and take ownership of their health and their health outcomes. And currently I work for an organization and we do consulting work for the VA on the same kind of ideas. So access to care and preventative health models within the VA system.
Amazing. All right. Well, thank you. So let's talk about blood pressure, shall we? Basically I'll give a little bit of background. The reason that I got almost very just like on a dime so involved in blood pressure and why I got so invested in it is in a very short period of time, I heard a number of stories, both reading online and also just straight from the mouth from people I know who had family members or friends who dropped dead out of nowhere. And these are not people who had any other signs of being ill. They were not sick. They were very fit. They worked out regularly. They ate very well. And literally 40 years old, 50 years old, just dropped dead, like out of nowhere. And there were enough of these stories, like 3 or 4 within a period of about 2 weeks, that it was just enough that I was like, what the fuck? Just, it was crazy to hear that. So, and the common denominator was high blood pressure, and they had no idea. And then in addition to that, I saw your post in which you were holding your blood pressure monitor on Instagram, and you were just like, you can get it on Amazon for like $30. And I you can get anything on Amazon, like whatever you want, it's there. And I didn't even think about that. Like I went on Amazon, I got my own, and I started paying attention to my blood pressure. I've always been a big advocate of paying attention to data. And I think in fitness, it's very easy to pay attention to body fat, very easy to pay attention to your weight, very easy to pay attention to how much you're lifting. But we very often forget about the data markers that aren't necessarily so visible, and blood pressure being arguably one of the most important. So that's how I got so invested in it. Do you want to just talk about either some stories about why it's so important, about like how, like what the potential dangers are of not tracking your blood pressure?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I always say this, that the being 50 pounds overweight is not going to be the thing that kills you, because it's not the outside, it's not the fat, it's what it does to your internal organs. So, healthy lifestyle is so important for maintaining your inside health, right? Like the outside is great, but the inside is what really counts. And blood pressure is one of those things that impacts so many different body systems. So the number one killer for all people in the United States is heart disease. And one of the number one contributing factors to heart disease is high blood pressure. And it's really easy to find out that you have it if you simply check. But there are almost no signs. Hypertension is called the silent killer because there's no signs or symptoms for most people until it is at a level that can kill you. I had a patient who was in his 30s who died of an aortic aneurysm, which is like he bled out internally, essentially. And that's what got me really passionate about it, because had he been tracking his blood pressure and known that he needed to be on medication and have lifestyle changes, he probably wouldn't have died, and he certainly wouldn't have died in his 30s. So it's really just about knowing yourself and knowing your numbers and taking action early.
Now, just to go back to that patient in his 30s, like was there any other indicators? Like, was he overweight? Was he sedentary? Like what else was going on? Or was he just completely on the outside looked fine, but had this going on internally?
Yeah, he definitely wasn't one of those people you would say like, oh, that guy's really fit, but he looked like a normal dude. You know, he just looked like a normal guy. So nothing that would like say, oh, he's at, you know, screaming high risk for this condition. And because of that, he probably didn't go to his doctor that often, or his doctor didn't pay that much attention to his numbers. And, you know, then this happened.
So the reason that I think I try and pay attention to the things that I have like strong emotional responses to, because usually it's not always logic. And I think it's more emotion that gets us to make radical changes as opposed to logic. I mean, we know cigarettes are going to kill us, but like people still buy them all the time, right? It's a lot of times it's the emotional response to seeing like a lung or seeing a documentary on someone who had emphysema and how it affected their life. I think it's the emotional response to these things that really get people to make a change, which is why I think these stories are so powerful, of literally just someone who you would look at, they look like a relatively healthy individual as much as you can just see from the outside. But that's the whole point, is you never know what's going on the inside. And we talk about that from a mental health perspective and emotional health, but we oftentimes don't really consider the physiology, the physical health of what could be going on. So, I mean, is there anything else that literally could just be it, that like, hey, like, listen, you can't tell anything about your blood pressure, like, if you know, maybe you're genetically, you're predisposed to it, but from a day-to-day basis, you can't know what your blood pressure is like unless you're checking it regularly. Is that accurate?
That's correct. Yeah, absolutely. If it's severely high, you might have some symptoms like headaches or nosebleeds, but if you're having those kinds of symptoms, your blood pressure is really, really high, and like would probably require hospitalization high. So for most people, like 99% of people, there are no signs or symptoms. It's just happening inside and you may not know.
So just briefly, like not to get like too deep into the science, but when you have high blood pressure, what is actually happening internally? Like what does that actually mean?
So it's the force of blood against your arteries. So when your heart beats, it pushes blood out of your heart and through your body. And the vessels that carry the blood from your heart to your body are called arteries. So the top number is measuring the highest amount of force when your heart contracts and pushes the blood out. And the bottom number, the diastolic, is measuring when your heart is relaxed and the blood is not pumping out at that moment. So hearts beat around 80 beats per minute on average. So it's measuring that force against the arteries every 80 beats and then on the rests.
Got it. Okay. And so the top number is the systolic, the bottom number is the diastolic. And if the pressure gets too high on the arteries, you run the risk of rupturing an artery?
Yeah, rupturing an artery or just causing damage over time that then puts you at risk for developing things like strokes because the arteries become damaged and then they develop scar tissue or they develop little areas where blood can start to pool and that's where you'll get strokes and even heart attacks from.
Got it. Okay. That's super helpful and like very clear and concise. So thank you. So could you talk about like what is a healthy range for blood pressure and then also what is too high and then what is too low?
Yeah. So there's actually no definition of low blood pressure without symptoms. So for example, for me, my blood pressures tend to run in like the 90s over 50s. And that's totally fine for me because I'm not symptomatic. I don't have any indicators that that's too low. But for high blood pressure, anything over 120 over 80 is considered high. You're starting to get into the high range. 140 over 90 is where you are can be diagnosed with hypertension.
So 140 starts when you get like in a very dangerous area.
140 over 90. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So what if it's like a 140 over 80?
So either number can indicate that it's hypertension. A lot of times it would kind of depend on your clinical picture and who you are. If you were to be like 140 over 60, your doctor would probably start looking for other possible things that are going on because it's unusual to not have them correlate pretty closely.
Got it. Okay. All right. So when you start to see something getting over, when you start to see the top number get over 120, that's when either like, should you get worried? Should you be nervous? What should your response be?
Yeah. So if you start to see it consistently over 120, you should start to look at your diet and your lifestyle and see, am I eating a lot of junk food? Am I eating a lot of processed things that are probably high in sodium and not fueling my body? Do I have a good fiber intake? Am I moving? Like, do I get in my car, drive to work, go sit down at my desk all day, go home and get in bed? Or are you making an intentional effort to move throughout the day. So really just looking at your habits and what you do, because the first line of defense that every doctor is going to say to somebody who has a slightly elevated blood pressure is work on your diet and exercise. So you can start really simply by just looking at what you do in your daily life and say, hey, I can like add some fruits and vegetables and cut out my chips for lunch, or I can take the stairs, or I can go for a 30-minute walk. And that alone can really make a big difference in your blood pressure. It usually takes a few months to see the effect, but you can lower your blood pressure by up to 20% by just doing some small changes.
That's actually a really a good point that I hadn't even thought to ask just yet, is how long it takes to see to see the effect of a blood pressure drop. So you say like from when you start paying more attention to your nutrition and exercise, it could take like up to like 2, 3, 4 months to see either a significant drop or any drop at all.
Yes. Yeah. Cause you're going to have to improve your vascular tone. So the same way that you like tone your muscles, right? You can see your muscles when you flex. It takes time to build that tone in the muscle. The blood vessels work very similarly. So you have to actually, it will take time to tone that vasculature so that it's more responsive It's more flexible and it's not as resistant and rigid to the blood pumping through it. And that'll lower your blood pressure.
Got it. That was okay.
Kind of technical.
No. That was perfect. And I love that analogy, how it works in the same way as muscle. That's amazing. So now I hate when people ask me these questions in relation to fitness, but I'm going to do it to you because I think it'll be interesting to hear the answer. Obviously both exercise and nutrition is better than either alone. But if you had to choose for one for people to focus on, people who might be either above 120, above 130, maybe even the 140s, if you had to choose one for people to start focusing on, which would it be, nutrition or exercise?
I get almost 100% nutrition, because a lot of the sort of traditional American diet is full of processed foods, and those processed foods tend to be very high in sodium. And what sodium does, what salt does, is it retains fluid. And when you are retaining fluid, that one factor alone can increase your blood pressure. So if you focus on reducing the amount of processed foods and reducing the amount of sodium that you have in your diet, then you can see a drop. You can see a drop pretty quickly with that.
How quickly would you say on that front?
Within a month, you can see a small drop. So you could go from the 130s to the 120s consistently if you were to cut out most of the sodium intake that you had in your diet.
Interesting. Okay, so now this brings up an interesting point, because a lot of people, I think, get concerned at the idea of eating salt at all in this. And they like it also, when you look at the sodium numbers on a container or whatever, they're so high, right? It's like, oh my God, there's this many milligrams of sodium, and they freak out. In addition to, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, hey, no, that's stupid. Don't say that. From one of the things that's helped me a lot with that is, obviously, we hear that in fitness, right? There, we often conflate different issues, right? So people get very concerned about sodium, and then often like they'll conflate, oh, well, sodium must be bad for fat loss. And like, well, no, hold on. We're not talking about fat loss. Sodium isn't inherently bad for that. But what it is, what you're saying, and tell me if I'm wrong, is that essentially the foods that tend to be higher in sodium are the foods that tend to be more processed. And not only if you're eating more processed foods are you going to be eating higher sodium, but also you're probably going to be eating too many calories. And then oftentimes from there, if that's what you're doing, your lifestyle will tend to be more sedentary, and all these things stacked on top of each other will tend to lead to also a higher blood pressure.
That is correct. So yeah, if you were going to like tackle the top of the mountain, the top of the heap, nutrition tends to be the pinnacle point for a lot of this, but it is overall lifestyle for sure.
Got it. And that makes a lot of sense. And is there any relationship between between the sodium and potassium, like in terms of, let's say someone is like, hey, let's say you have someone who's super fucking stubborn and they're like, I'm not going to eat less sodium. Is there any way that would eating more potassium help?
So on a technical level, yes, you could technically, eat enough potassium that you could cause wasting of the sodium, but that would be really difficult. And honestly, it can be dangerous because, consuming too much potassium or creating an electrolyte imbalance can cause you to have cardiac issues alone. Your body runs on a really specific regimen. And if you eat too much of anything, it will waste it. It will just dump it, right? You'll eliminate it. But if you start intentionally over consuming potassium and sodium to try to create your own balance, it can get dangerous.
Got it.
So I would not do anything like that without consulting a physician and having that guided pretty specifically.
That's the perfect response. It's amazing. So basically, don't be stubborn and feel, hey, I'm just going to continue to eat as much sodium as I can fit in my mouth. Just like, hey, like, so in actually, that's a good lead in. How would you recommend, like, what do you have any specific recommendations for people to figure out easier ways to reduce sodium intake?
So always read labels. If you are going to eat something that's processed, always read the label, see what the percentage of sodium is. And, you know, if that's something that's high in sodium, then skip it. I usually use sodium and added sugar, because if something has added sugar, it often has added salt. So, you know, if you just skip anything that has added sugar, added sodium, and then just eliminate it from your cooking habits as well. So if you're making stuff at home and you tend to put, you know, a lot of salt in your dishes, try swapping that out for maybe something that's spicy, or doing an Italian seasoned blend, or finding a salt-free alternative. That can go a long way. I mean, just it's pretty easy actually to add a gram of sodium to something without even really thinking about it.
Got it. Okay. And what do you think about the, I believe they're like the Mrs. Dash, like the no sodium, like salt, like type stuff. You know what I'm talking about? Is like, yeah. Are those good substitutes?
Yeah, those are great actually. And those are AHA approved. So the American Heart Association, backs them and supports those. They're also great ones. Like I use one from Trader Joe's called just Everyday Seasoning. And it's salt free, and it's one of my favorite go-tos because it's, you know, it's just like a good seasoning blend for me. And I tend to like spicy food, so I do a lot of like cayenne and red pepper as well.
Got it. Okay, that's perfect. And so do you have any specific food recommendations for people, like any like ideas or snacks or tips or for foods that people could start including in their whether it's for meals or for snacks or for things just to have around in the house, things they could put in their pantry that are generally good options that are like, whether it's low sodium or just generally good for overall heart health?
So, I mean, this sounds trite, but honestly, fruits and vegetables, especially things that are high in fiber. So like any way that you can get in more fruits and vegetables, do that. One thing that I do is I slice them, and I have them so that they're like easy to grab out of the refrigerator. Like my husband and I have our favorite go-tos. I always have those on hand. And just don't buy stuff. Like don't buy chips and don't buy pretzels and don't buy, like, Cheez-Its are my absolute favorite food, but I just don't buy them because they're, you know, if I have the choice between that and an apple, I'm going to eat the Cheez-Its, right? So avoid having things that are not great in your pantry, and as much fruits and vegetables as you can get in any way you can get them in.
Now let me ask you this, because obviously, you know, like, and I know you and I have very similar beliefs on more flexible dieting and not being outrageously rigid and strict. Like, do you ever have Cheez-Its?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean,
so how do you manage that? How do you manage the balance? Because like, even so, I'm not an expert in blood pressure or any of this stuff. Like that's not what I, so literally I can, as you said, like no Cheez-Its or pretzels. Like my girlfriend looks over, she was like, oh my God. Like, cause like I'm obsessed with pretzels. She just took Cheez-Its out of the drawer right now. So like, how do you manage that balance, and how do you recommend people who either might be trying to reduce their blood pressure or keep an eye on it? Like, how do you balance that?
So for me, I'm a person of habit, right? So, I travel for my job a lot. I travel all over the country. I use Cheez-Its as a reward. So if I've had a really long travel day, I've been on an airplane for 6 hours, then I went to 6 hours worth of meetings, and I will stop at a store and buy like a personal bag of Cheez-Its and give myself a treat. But I always think about it as a treat. Like I don't eat birthday cake every day, but every now and then it's a treat. And if I want a treat, then that's fine. But it's really about the habit of it. So if I have a box of Cheez-Its in my house all the time, I will eat them all the time. So it's finding ways that I can incorporate it as a treat.
Got it. That makes sense.
I think that works differently for everybody, but.
Yeah, I mean, it works. Of course, it's different for everyone. But I think just knowing that, in the same way, I think what you said earlier actually was very telling, and it almost, you said it very nonchalantly, and I want to even go back to it, was how you can, you know, it can take several months to see differences in your blood pressure, like to go down if you're in the 130s to get into the 120s or 140, whatever it is, in the same way that it'll take several months to see results going down. It would take it. I'm assuming your blood pressure doesn't skyrocket from having one bag of Cheez-Its or even like a week of eating relatively high sodium food. Is that correct?
That's totally correct. Yeah. I mean, if you were to like, just like you have a high sodium meal, right? You went out and had Chinese food, and the next day you wake up and you feel bloated, and like you look at your face and you can like see, you can see that you're retaining fluid. You might see like a slight increase from that. In this, it's exactly the same process. So you're seeing the external effect, but your blood pressure would be reading high, because your vascular space, your blood vessels are holding on to more fluid because you ate more sodium. So you might see a dip up in the first day or maybe 2 days after you were to like do a high sodium binge, if you will, but it would go right back down to your baseline.
Got it. And so really where I think people can find less stress with this, and the same, because people stress about this and it's so important. It's like with, you know, with fat loss as well, like they feel like they have one Oreo and they fucked up their entire diet. It's like, if you had a bag of pretzels, or if you're in, cause especially with Thanksgiving coming up, and maybe by the time this is published, it might even be after Thanksgiving, but, people tend to, they go for the worst case scenario from one like treat or one meal or one vacation. It's like, this is all a process over time. If your blood pressure is reading high now, then it's going to take time for it to drop. Don't expect it to drop radically within the first week. And if your blood pressure is in a good place right now, don't freak out and like get rid of all of the sodium in your apartment or your house, and like don't like swear off all food, all pizza or whatever, because like, God forbid, like you treat yourself. But I think that's really, I think it's a really important way to look at it. And in the almost like the intuitive eating world, which I've become less and less a fan of, not because I don't like intuitive eating, but because what intuitive eating has been interpreted as recently, they often don't like that word treat. They don't like the idea like, oh, you shouldn't feel like you're having a treat or rewarding yourself with food. Like it shouldn't be that way. And I'm like, hey, we're not saying you can't eat those foods, but we are saying these foods shouldn't be habitual in your diet, especially in large quantities. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. In fact, I think it probably helps more than it hurts from the perspective of, this is something that you include in your diet on a sparing basis. This is not something that you should be having every day in large quantities. This is something that you treat yourself with occasionally. And the more you can do that, and without feeling guilty about it, but the more you can do that with a healthy mindset and with an overall healthy diet and lifestyle, the better not only you're going to be from a obviously body composition and fat loss perspective, but also even more importantly is a heart health perspective.
Absolutely. I say this all the time, like this is kind of my tagline, that health is habit. So your habits dictate your health in a lot of ways. It's not one meal, one day, one week. It's what you do consistently over time that really matters. So if you eat, like you have one great day where you do nothing but eat fruits and vegetables and a piece of skinless chicken breast, that's great. But that's not going to move the needle much. And in the same way, having one meal that's like pizza and lasagna and soda isn't going to move the needle much in the other way. Like you might have a mental, there might be like a mental cost to that, but as far as your physical health, it's not going to move much in either direction. So it really is what you do consistently over time that matters. And honestly, diet and exercise are amazing because really focusing on that can be curative. And unlike medications, which are just treating, they treat symptoms, you can cure your own conditions. You can cure diabetes and you can cure hypertension if you focus on creating healthy habits. that you can stick with, that you can live with for life.
That is really one of the most powerful things that I'm like, I had almost an epiphany the other day where I was like, exercise is literally medicine. Like literally, like it's so crazy what our bodies allow us to do if we do it, right? Mm-hmm. It's incredible in both ways. Like it's so crazy how our bodies can adapt to doing essentially like doing awful things to it and can adapt and adapt and adapt until it can't anymore. But you can also recover. I remember just like growing up, one of the things that blew my mind as a young kid was that I believe it's lobsters and maybe even starfish. They can literally regrow fucking limbs.
Yes.
Like, I remember hearing that. I believe my mom told me that, or I heard that at an aquarium field trip one day when I was really young and being like, are you kidding me? Like that is crazy. But even though we can't regrow limbs yet, we have so much, we are so strong and capable and the abilities of our body to recover from outrageously damaging circumstances is remarkable. And really it doesn't, and here's really, I think an important part of the discussion is, it doesn't have to be radical changes. But that being said, just because it's not radical changes doesn't make it easy, because any new habit takes a lot of effort and time and dedication and patience. But I think it's a very powerful thing to understand, which is why I sort of wanted your opinion on if you had to choose nutrition or exercise, what would you start with? Because it doesn't have to be radical. It just has to be consistent.
Exactly. Absolutely. I mean, I think actually one issue I have with sort of the health and fitness world as it is right now is that everything tends to be messaged as radical. So it's either like, you're going to lose 100 pounds in 30 days or like get 6-pack abs in 2 weeks. Like that's stupid. No, like, and that just sets people up for failure and thinking that they're failures and feeling like they're failures. And when you don't see your blood pressure drop in 2 weeks, you're like, oh, screw it, I'm a failure. No, not at all. It just takes consistency. You have to be patient and be consistent with it. And if you do that, you can literally change your life and you can save your own life. And that personal accountability of like, I am in control of this and I can do this and I will do this. I will make myself healthy. I think is really powerful. I find that really empowering. And you know, I wish that the space is a little bit more focused on that side instead of the get results right now.
But that doesn't market very well.
Well, yeah. Yeah. It's not super
easy
sexy
to sell people. You know, I have to ask, I was just thinking about this and I think, you know, I'm very interested to hear your opinion on this. And I know, I think a lot of people listening will be, do you have an opinion on, people tend to know my opinion on most diets from a fat loss perspective, but do you have an opinion on the ketogenic diet from a heart health perspective?
So there's a lot of research pending out there right now. A lot of things are in the works. So conventionally, the wisdom has been to avoid super high fat diets. And there isn't any research to say otherwise at this point. So I'm quite hesitant with ketogenic diet unless you are treating a specific medical condition. So it does work really well for like children with seizure disorders. You know, it can actually cure that in certain circumstances. But if you're not being guided by a doctor and you don't know what other maybe underlying health condition you might have, keto, I think it could potentially dangerous in worst case for some people. And in best case, I think it's just super restrictive and yeah. Sounds pretty joyless to me.
So. And you know, I've always said, I'll always say, do whatever works best for you. But I think your message that really is very important here is you can't tell from the outside how healthy you are. And really, like, it's not the 50 pounds of extra fat that's going to kill you. It's what that extra fat does to your internal organs and everything. And I think so many of us, myself included, it's very easy to look at body composition and body fat and muscle mass and strength and endurance, which are all phenomenal and important to keep track of. But really, with none of that matters if your heart isn't healthy and healthy in other areas. And I think, you know, I'm very interested to see the upcoming research on the ketogenic diet. I know from my own research, I found the exact same thing, that generally speaking, like it can actually be very good for individuals with epilepsy. That's really the only studies I've found that have more or less conclusively been like positive in ketogenic favor. But otherwise, I have always been hesitant for anybody to recommend it. Number one, for the restrictive nature of it and how many people I've seen develop disordered relationships with food, specifically around carbohydrates. But more importantly is how we don't fully know the potential impact it could have negatively on your heart, especially if maybe genetically you're predisposed to higher blood pressure. You don't know where your blood pressure is at. And I think what's really important is, yes, I think on a general basis, and tell me if I'm wrong, being a higher body fat and then going to a lower body fat, you will tend to see a reduction in blood pressure, a healthier blood pressure, but that's not always the case. And you can be a very healthy body weight and still have very high blood pressure.
That is completely true. Like, for example, my husband is very normal body weight, has a healthy percentage of fat, but just congenitally, he tends to have high blood pressure. So, we, you know, monitor him weekly, and he has to be very, very diligent with his diet, because like from the outside, you would never know that he tends to have high blood pressure. But I mean, a couple years ago, it was consistently like 160s over 100.
So, oh my God.
Yeah. So we've had to be really diligent with his diet and monitoring to make sure that he doesn't develop problems later on.
And if you don't mind me asking, feel free to skip. Like, where does it generally land now?
He tends to be consistently in the 130s over 70s, which is still a little bit on the higher than I would like it. but after consulting with his physician, they don't feel that he needs to start any medications or anything at this point. So we just continue to track and be diligent with diet and exercise.
Good. And that's, I'm really glad that topic came up, because I think a lot of people hear, I mean, I know it used to be anything over 130. Now, relatively more recently, they made the switch from anything systolic over 120 is like considered, I believe, pre-hypertension. I don't know if I'm wrong on that.
No, you're correct. That's right.
So, and I remember I have a very obsessive personality, and as soon as I got into blood pressure, I started reading obsessively on it. And I know there are a bunch of people who were like very worried. Like, as soon as they made the change from 130 to 120, people immediately who were in the 120s were like, "Oh my God, like I'm pre-hypertension." They're like, "Relax. Like, right. Just because we changed the guidelines does not mean all of a sudden that you're at risk for like an overwhelming heart attack." But I think it's a scary thing for people to think about, like being in pre-hypertension, hypertension, to hear that, listen, even like your husband, he could be in the 130s and consulting with his physician, like seeing his progress over time, he's not at an immediate risk for anything, doesn't need medication. It's more about maintaining healthy habits, keeping going, being smart with overall intake and exercise, sleep. Well, actually, that's an important thing I'd like to discuss. How does sleep play a role in this?
Sleep can have a huge impact. So the way that the body works when you're sleeping is that it actually does its own little cardio workout. So your blood vessels will dilate and constrict as you're getting good, healthy REM cycles, if you're getting good, healthy sleep. So if you are cutting yourself short on sleep over time, you lose your vascular tone. So it can impact how heart healthy you are, just because you don't get the benefit of that component. But also when you're not sleeping, you tend to be under more stress. So, and your brain obviously dictates your whole body. So if your brain is under stress from lack of sleep, it can drive your blood pressure up just as a like a fight or flight kind of instinct response to make sure that you're able to keep going and have energy. And creating a blood pressure response is one of the tactics that we'll use. So sleep is hugely important, and having good sleeping habits can have a big impact in either direction, can help you or can hurt you.
So, and I think it's, for me, something I'm very interested in. I mean, I spent the better part of the last 3 years, actually now so I spent 3 years coaching Gary Vaynerchuk, like every day, 7 days a week, and my sleep was abysmal. And you know, it's something I'm talking more and more about now, is because of crazy travel schedule and focusing so much on my business. I mean, I was legitimately doing at least one all-nighter a week every week. And for crazy travel, going to London, Hong Kong, Germany, LA, New York, it was insane. And over the last 6 months or so, since I stopped coaching him, I've been sleeping way more consistently. And basically one of the things that, you know, I've been tracking, my blood pressure has dropped since I started doing all of this, which was great. I remember the first time I did it, it was like 137 over 70, which I was not very happy about. And then now it's closer to, it's the lowest it was 123 over like 61. And then yesterday was like 124 over 60 or something. So it's now mid 120s or so. So literally about like over a 10 to 12 point drop on the systolic, which I'm super excited about. And I think the main change has just been getting better sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can have an immediate impact. If you're really cutting yourself short on sleep, focusing on that can make a big change. I mean, and it's not easy to do. I think sleep is one of the harder habits to tackle, actually, because it is such a, like, your nighttime routine is so specific and individualized to you. So really looking at your sleeping habits can be tough, but it's hugely important.
It's super hard. And it was actually literally the blood pressure, monitoring my blood pressure and keeping an eye on it, is what legitimately was the one thing that caused that emotional response in me to get my assistant to take on a greater workload so that I wouldn't have to be up answering emails at least one night a week. And then to give more responsibility elsewhere and delegate elsewhere, like literally getting the blood pressure monitor and seeing that number. It's so funny because here, anytime I go to the doctor, my blood pressure would be a little bit high, and I would always be like, is that okay? They'd be like, oh yeah, it's normal. Like, and you come to the doctor, you're a little bit more nervous. So, and like, I understand it. Like, that's like a thing, but consistently for like 3 years, every time I went in, it was like over 130. And I was like, are you sure that's okay? They're like, yeah, it's totally fine. I'm like, I don't fucking think that's true. And it was literally getting my own blood pressure monitor and seeing that number, that I was like, fuck this, like, absolutely not. So, and that was the fueling factor for me to make the changes that I needed in order to actually get sleep. And within a month, like, I had a significant drop. And it was like, it's so cool, because I talk about the why people get motivated to take action. It was like, a lot of times it's, you have to do certain things that you don't want to do in order to see results. Then those results fuel more motivation, and that's literally it. Now I'm doing much more cardio. I'm literally having significantly more fruit than I was having before. It was one of the main reasons for the big ass salad every day. It was one of those like hidden reasons for the big ass salad. Like, I mainly try and put it out there like, hey, listen, if you struggle with losing fat and staying hungry, have a big ass salad. But in my head, I'm also like, these motherfuckers, it's going to help their heart too, and they don't even know it.
And
so it's like, there's so much to like, I think this is probably a really good thing to end on, is I think getting the blood pressure monitor, seeing you post about it on your Instagram, me getting it, mine was $26 on Amazon, delivered within 48 hours. Like, and that's sort of one of my main goals with this movement that literally you started for me seeing your post, is getting a blood pressure monitor in the hands of as many people as possible, because we don't know how many people's lives it could save. Like, do you have any words on that or ideas or what they should get or where they should get it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the really important thing is to get an FDA approved monitor. And there'll be a disclaimer on all monitors that are FDA approved. So just make sure that you have that, because that means that the machine is calibrated within 10 points systolic and 10 points diastolic. No, sorry, 10 points systolic and 5 points diastolic. So just make sure that you have something that's FDA approved. And then when you go to your doctor for your yearly checkup, I hope you do that, have them correlate the readings that you're getting on your machine and the readings that they're getting, just to be sure, you know, that you don't need to replace your monitor every few years. And make sure that the cuff fits. So all of the monitors come with a guide for how big your arm should be for each cuff. So make sure that you have an appropriately sized cuff, because if the cuff's too big or too small, you'll get bad readings. So read all of the instructions and read the, like, what you should be doing to check. And and make sure that you're doing it around the same time every day that you do check. So if you check it once a week and you do it in the morning on Saturday, like, be consistent with checking it in the morning, because your blood pressure will go up throughout the course of the day. That's just natural. That's normal. So, being consistent with that as well. And besides that, like, seriously, you can ditch your scale if the scale causes stress or trauma or whatever, but don't skip the blood pressure monitor.
Amazing. Kate, thank you so much. This is extraordinary. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on. We'll repeat it. Please tell everyone where they can follow you on social media.
Yeah, so it's at the Nurse Kate.
At the Nurse Kate. Well, thank you so much. This was incredible. I really appreciate you coming on, and have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
And that wraps it up for this episode of the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Huge thank you to Nurse Kate for coming on and speaking with me. If you enjoyed the episode, please do me a favor and leave a rating on iTunes. They help a lot, so huge thank you to everyone who's been doing that. And in the meantime, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out. Have a wonderful day. I'll talk to you soon.